Hey, welcome to the guest segment of the Common Sense Show. Thank you so much for joining us. Always really good to be with you. And as my friend Doug Thornton says, we've got a crisis brewing about every 12 hours now. But fortunately, what we're talking about here is not a crisis of an immediate nature, but I still think it's going to be a crisis. And our guest is Tim Mashler. And we're going to be talking about a book that he's helping to promote, written by Melissa Reardon, called Trump and Sodom. And I think we might be talking about Sodom and Gomorrah. Tim, welcome to the show, and I'll let you correct me on that if my interpretation is incorrect. But welcome to the show. First time guest, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. And you've got it just right.
Well, I have to say that I didn't think we had such a positive president until he started handling COVID wrong and listening to the wrong people. But his first 3+ years were 3 of the best years America's ever seen in many regards. I don't think all regards, but many regards. And I feverishly supported his reelection. And I took a lot of heat when I took a stance that this election was stolen from him. But now, given this, you know, I don't know if I should be rethinking my support of him. Tell me what your concerns are about President Trump now and a social issue that's come up.
Yeah, well, it's kind of on two levels. Started back in January, February, a friend of ours who is a prominent GOP leader contacted us and said, were you aware that President Trump was the main attraction at a Log Cabin Republicans, a homosexual group, Log Cabin Republicans gala at Mar-a-Lago? No, we weren't aware of that, so we checked it out. Yes, it was. And we found out, too, there was another gala that he hosted, or at least he was at Mar-a-Lago the year before, where he gave an award to Rick Grenell, his openly homosexual cabinet member, saying there's been no better spokesman, not only for the people in this room, but for the people of the country. So what are we going to do about this? I went back to my GOP guy and said, if I can get 100 letters, petitions of Christian patriots, people that are concerned about this, would you meet with President Trump? He said, absolutely. So I got the letters. Over 125 people signed on to this. But when we tried to get the meeting, we were stonewalled. And so that's when Melissa Reardon wrote Trump and Sodom, letting the cat out of the bag. And so I did have contact with one of President's staff. And I said, look, we don't want to publish this book. What we really want is a meeting with the president, with someone that you know that has met with you before. And so anyway, we didn't get it. So we published the book. And then about a month ago, my GOP guy got a call from President Trump, said, I want to talk to you about this. And we thought, whoa, this is a real, you know, an open door now that we didn't have before. And so the president said, well, what do you want me to do? And our GOP leader said, well, first of all, reconsider your alliance with this community or this group. And also, please give no special treatment to special interest groups. So the president said, OK, I'll look at that. Yeah, I can do that. And he said, I'll send you a policy document that embodies all of that. We never got the policy document. My GOP guy inquired people inside the campaign. So where we are right now is the president said, I will no longer listen on this topic. That's a quote. So we're kind of back to square one. And that's why I'm out there making people aware of what's going on.
Well, and it's kind of a rock and a hard place situation, because in anything that I was sent by the person that put this interview together for us, I haven't seen you or your people say anything about denying the civil rights of people who are openly gay. But you're quite clear that marriage is between man and woman. And so you're not calling for discrimination, like with housing and retirement and things like that, are you? Yeah, I didn't think so. So, but you know, that's the first thing that the left will point to.
Oh, I know.
You guys are homophobic and you're trying to deny basic rights. And yeah, I guess it's accurate to say you're trying to deny them the right of marriage, union of marriage. I think that's probably an accurate statement. So tell me, what's your justification for your position? Is it religious? Is it legal? Is it both? What would you say?
Well, I'd say it's scriptural. Scripture is clear, both in the Old Testament and the New Testament, about homosexuality. So that's what I meant earlier when I said it's two levels. On the one hand, our point to President Trump from a political standpoint is his base, his Christian patriot MAGA base, is not going to be happy about this.
That's true.
That's that. But and why is that? Well, it's because God's word is clear about homosexuality. So that's really what we're standing on. We're, you know, if President Trump, when he was president, if he becomes president again, certainly he would defend the rights of all groups, no matter what. I mean, that's
exactly,
that's what you do as president. Sure. But at the same time, you don't give special treatment to this group or be aligned with it. And that's, he's kind of applauding this group, you know, and raising, and it has some dangers, Dave, because, for example, one of the initiatives of the Log Cabin Republicans is to criminalize conversion therapy, which is if somebody is a homosexual, wants to get out of that lifestyle, they can do that. And Log Cabin Republicans want to criminalize that. And they have a worldwide agenda. They want to normalize homosexuality across the board. And that's when they say we're celebrating homosexuality or gay people. That celebrating really is kind of a euphemism for pushing the envelope, just as I mentioned, criminalizing conversion therapy. So that's what we're very much concerned about from a scriptural standpoint. That's really what we stand on.
Yeah, and where I stand on this is that their rights end where my nose begins. And what I mean by that is what I see in the LGBTQ movement, and this is certainly not true for, I think, even most, because there's many groups that are gay that openly oppose some of these agendas that we're seeing, especially the extreme agendas of grooming children. But with regard to their rights, they're not happy with the fact that they're not being persecuted and those rights are protected. They aren't happy until we are celebrating their rights.
Exactly.
And that's the part that bothers me right there. No one has to celebrate my choices, and I shouldn't have to celebrate anybody else's choices. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear what goes on in your bedroom. And that's my position. I don't know how you guys take this, but I don't like being dictated to about what I should believe and not believe.
Yeah, and that's really what's happening. Some of the letters that we included in the book, I included all the letters that we, or 95% of the letters that we had. And that's exactly what people say. Look, we don't want this normalized. I don't want my grandchildren, to just have to roll over and say, oh, it is normal. You know, they just don't want this.
You know, but in reality, they have the right to argue for this. I mean, they have free speech rights, certainly.
Sure.
So they have the right to argue for it. But we also have the right to argue against it. And that's the right they try to take away from us. And you're right about one thing, especially with Trump, coming back to Trump. I want to make America great again. Well, when America was great again, we didn't get into grooming children, lowering the age of consent. So let me bring this back to you. Is this group, we'll get into the conversion in a second, because I'll come at this as a former therapist, but in this group, are they advocating for pushing the boundaries to the limits where, you know, as NAMBLA used to say, sex before 8 or it's too late? Are they pushing these kind of boundaries too?
Well, I think so. I think if you go on their website, it's packaged in a nice package. You know, it sounds good, but no, they're pushing the envelope in a lot of different ways. Conversion therapy, or criminalizing conversion therapy, is just one of the things they're all about. So, yeah.
Oh, see, that's where that really gets my ire up. OK, because, you know, I answer to God and judge not lest you be judged. Mm-hmm. But when your behavior carries over to our children, that's where I draw the line. So let's go to this trying to criminalize conversion therapy. First of all, I look at this as a legal issue. That's a First Amendment issue, and it's a parental rights issue. Does this extend to parental rights for them to not want their children to be groomed into these lifestyles?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, that's, again, it just reflects what their agenda is. And not only that, but it goes on to homosexual parenting. Who knows what the next thing is that they might come up with. So, you know, it's the camel under the camel's nose under the tent. You know, once they get in, they push their agendas as far as they can.
Yeah. And so to me, I think I see why Trump might be motivated to do this. How does your group look at this? How did Melissa Reardon, when she wrote the book, how do you guys just look at this collectively? Why would Trump embrace this lifestyle? What does he have to gain from it?
Well, he's looking at it from a strictly political standpoint. You know, he thinks that in going back to Ronald Reagan's big tent, you know, you've got to include everybody. But we believe he's making a big mistake even in that regard, because as we're finding out, people that wrote letters in the book and people that we talked to are very upset about this. This is a line like abortion that many Christian patriots, MAGA people will simply not cross. They just won't cross it.
To me, I don't know what he thinks he's going to gain from this, because you're right about his base. His base is conservative, mostly Christian, and not involved in these fringe movements. I don't know what he thinks he's going to gain. I mean, it's like cost benefit. If I was looking at this as a businessman, I'm saying, how many votes am I going to attract by doing this versus how many I'm going to lose from a base that stuck with me through thick and thin? That's what really confuses me about the wisdom of this choice.
Well, you put your finger on something that actually is in the book. One of the chapters says, looks at President Trump's The Art of the Deal, you know, his famous book of the 80s. And Melissa says, well, you know, you better look at this, look at both sides. If you think you're going to gain something, and then you look at God's word and you look at all the Christian patriots that are pushing back on this, I think it's a big mistake. I mean, so we'll see what happens. We'll see if he's gets awake on this. You know, it goes deep. It's not only President Trump, but it's in the Republican Party as well.
Yeah,
Ron McDaniel, even a year before that gala, came up with an RNC Pride Coalition trying to get, you know, more homosexuals into the Republican Party, you know. So, you know, it goes beyond President Trump. And it goes. It's deep in his family as well. 2021, when Rick Grenell gave the Game Changer Award, Melania also got an award. And she has come out, you know, very much in favor of what President Trump is doing with these groups. So, as I say, it runs deep. Unfortunately, we hope that he will awaken to this and acknowledge that marriage is between a man and a woman. You know, you could imagine at one of his rallies, if he said that, there'd be overwhelming support, even more than he has now, particularly as people become more aware of this. As I say, they were people that wrote letters were, I mean, all of the letters started out by thanking him for the first 3 years, thanking him for everything that he's done. Like one woman said, I voted for you twice. I hope I can vote for you again. That's what I mean about not crossing the line.
Yeah. And that, I think that statement right there really encapsulates how most people are going to feel. What I'm most disturbed about is he has really centered a lot of his leadership on conveying to the public that they want the public to be autonomous in their decision making. Parental rights are more important than school board policy. You know, I've heard him say that. And yet here he's turning around and saying, I support a group that wants to take away parental rights so third parties can groom their children to be what these parents don't want.
Exactly.
Does it go that far? I mean, Tim, does it go that far?
It does. I mean, he doesn't talk that way because it's hidden. You know, he'll say, you know, he'll hold up a Bible. He'll talk about, you know, God bless you. And with God's help, we'll do this and all of that. But when it comes down to really the fundamentals, the word of God, he doesn't. You know, when I said earlier that when he said ultimately the lad, this was a couple of weeks ago when he said, I'll no longer listen on this topic. He's not listening to us. He's not listening to our side. He's listening to the loud homosexual side. And they are loud.
Yeah, that's one thing they know how to do is push the button.
Yeah.
The are there any other objectionable positions by this law? I've never heard of this group, Log Cabin Republicans, besides the evisceration of parental rights with regard to grooming their children?
No, if you look on the website, it's just they're trying to normalize it. They're trying to make it, and you're talking about children. I mean, this is happening in the schools already.
Sure.
You know, and so they're just pushing that envelope to get it, to get our children just thinking, oh yeah, gays, they call them gays. You know, we don't call them gays, we call them homosexuals. Try not to use the euphemisms. You know, the Melissa in her book, years ago, before she knew the Lord and became born again, she worked in a women's center, and that women's center was pushing the envelope, their own envelope with feminism. And one of the things they went after was words. You know, if you can change the words, you can change thinking.
That's
so,
true. That's true.
You know, gays, I mean, excuse me, homosexuals became gays. Abortion was free love. I mean, you know, all of the things that they pushed have become kind of normal in our society. I mean, most people don't say the word homosexual. They say LGBTQ++ or whatever, you know.
You know what I'm seeing a reemergence, speaking of language, I'm seeing the reemergence in the mainstream media of all places and in academia, the word queer to describe people who are homosexual. Yes. There was an incident, and I don't believe the charge. Someone from Arizona State University, I live in Arizona, they alleged that people from Turning Point chased a queer professor, that was the word they used in the report, and harassed them for their beliefs. Well, there is footage that two people were indeed pursuing and verbally being aggressive, not physically, but verbally. And I would say it looked aggressive, but there's no proof it was Turning Point. So I want to make sure Charlie Kirk doesn't get mad at me because I'm not saying that. I haven't seen the proof for that. But what I did see was the use of the word queer repeatedly in the story. So, you know, the thing is, I don't know what to call people who are homosexual. My intent is not to offend them personally. I just don't ask me to embrace what you do. I'll protect your rights, but don't ask me to embrace what you do.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting, isn't it, Dave, that we've kind of come back to queer. You know, when I was growing up, that's what
too.
The homosexuals were, you know, they were, you know, and so that I thought that was, you know, kind of a no-no for some time. But no, you're right, because now it's LGBTQQ, you know, and Q stands for queer. So I don't get it, you know.
I remember I'm driving home as a kid with my dad, and he's starting to give me the birds and the bees talk part one. And I asked him, I said, well, what does the word queer mean to you? And I think I was probably about 11 years old at the time. And he described it fairly graphically. And he said, it's a sin in our religion. And that was my first exposure real to the real word queer. And I don't mean to demean anybody. Go do what you want. I answer to God for what I do. And as long as you're not crossing over into my territory and affecting my life or my kid's life, that's that what you are is what you are, and you got to deal with it. But it bothers me that Trump supports a group that wants to cut into mainstream values, because that's what Trump ran on.
Exactly. That's I agree 100%. And that's, again, that's why we're out there hoping, praying that that he'll awaken to this and really listen to our voice, not the voice of the homosexuals.
You know, whoever's and you know what? I don't think Trump really believes this, okay? Especially knowing about his past the way we do. I don't think it's Trump. I think he's, again, the victim of very bad selective choice mm-hmm. for who he lets get around him. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he had Bill Barr and all these other morons that served in his cabinet. Yeah. And it hurt him. It hurt him badly. And I think this is another instance where it's going to hurt him. But here's what concerns me about Trump's judgment. He's got liberals that support these causes wholeheartedly and want us to have parades and celebrate. And yet they're trying to put him in jail so he can't run for president. But he's going to go around and embrace their philosophies. That doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense to me either. But that's exactly what he's doing, embracing those things that are really an anathema to our values. And surprisingly, you know, because we've been big supporters. I went back to J6, you know, stopped the steal, got a visit from the local sheriff when I got home.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, tell me, I want to go there. Tell me what that was like.
Well, it was the experience of January 6th was fantastic. I went back and I was there January 5th and went to all the rallies. The rallies were tremendous, positive, great experience. People were just there for a reason. We were there to, as President Trump ultimately said, peacefully and patriotically make our voices known.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic experience. And then on the January 6th day, a group that I hooked up with, we went down to the Ellipse where President Trump was going to be speaking. And we went down like at 5:30 in the morning. It was really cold, freezing down there. And we were hoping to get in. We didn't, but we waited until I think President spoke at 12:30 or 1. So we waited for that. And then we all marched down to the Capitol. But my group, we said, well, this is going to take forever. The Congress is going to be considering all of the evidence, you know, for the steal.
And so you thought, yeah.
Yeah, so we thought, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we went on, you know, I got on the subway, went back to the hotel, and boom, it exploded. You know, we saw everything that, you know, the insurrection, quote unquote, or the Fedsurrection, as we've called it.
Better put, yes. I like the last choice of words better.
Yeah.
Because we know that happened. You know, it's just I've met Owen Schroyer a couple of times at conferences we've been at, like Steve Quayle's conferences, and we've spoken at similar conferences. And I got to tell you, he's going to prison in 4 days.
Yeah.
And Owen, I've never heard him say anything that directly threatened violence against anybody. Okay, never threatened insurrection, never, ever. And yet he said death to tyrants, and that's getting him a prison term.
It's I can't believe it. Yeah, and you know, when I was there, Dave, on the 5th, one of the rallies, I think it was at the Supreme Court. I can't remember. There are different rallies around town. I listened to Alex Jones, and Alex was one of the best speeches I think I've ever heard about this, about what's going on in our nation. Mm-hmm. And it was the same thing. No, I mean, no way was he encouraging violence or insurrection or anything else. He was just there telling the truth. So I think that's where Mr. Schroyer has, he stepped over the line, you know.
Well, Owen and Alex went around that day and were telling people, don't breach the barrier. It's a setup. They were telling people it was a setup. I know people that were there that heard them say that told me this.
Yeah.
That's why I don't know how you put someone in jail like that. But back to our point here. I can tell you where all this comes from. I've spent the last week investigating who really controls the military-industrial complex, who controls the banks, who controls Big Pharma, who controls the World Economic Forum. And I had to go three levels deep to find that answer, but I found it. And I think this enters into what we're talking about. It's BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard. And what Trump is responding to, if you were to ask me to guess, is he's trying to pacify the other side without really believing it, and probably hopes it won't become a big issue. And it's the ESG.
Mm-hmm.
BlackRock is solid. And by the way, BlackRock, as I found out, controls 70% of our nation's GDP. They don't own very much, but they control 70%. And ESG is about everything that's not mainstream Christianity, mainstream American values. They promote every extremist view you can find. And this is what's led Bud Light to go broke. Target's going broke. Disney losing money left and right. They're bleeding money. And it's all over this ESG, because here's what they've done to businesses. If you don't do the ESG, BlackRock controls 88% of the Fortune 500 S&Ps. This is all what I found in the last week. Mm-hmm. And they can determine who gets lending and who doesn't.
That's what it is.
And that's what they're promoting. Do you think, Melissa, or have you looked into this aspect of it, maybe on why Trump feels he might be locked into a corner on this issue?
You know, we have. I do know about Vanguard and BlackRock
and State Street. Yeah,
and State Street. You know, the big three.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't made that connection, you know, with whether why Trump is doing what he's doing. You know, we just keep coming back to being aligned with this group and groups like it and applauding them is wrong, scripturally wrong. So we stand on that. Why he's doing it, you know, he could be, you know, playing. I mean, he's a bright guy, obviously, you know,
yes.
And he's been a tremendously successful businessman. I mean, mm-hmm. No doubt about that. But what you were saying a few minutes ago about the people surrounding him, unfortunately, I see that even now, you know, with the gatekeepers that we've been dealing with that didn't want to talk to the boss about this, you know. And we're not talking about anything radical. We're just talking about, you know, you should hear from his base, and his base is not happy.
And, you know, he'll never see an uprising against him from his base. If this catches fire, people will just drop off.
Yeah.
And there's really there's nowhere else for people to go.
That's the problem. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Ramaswamy, I don't know if you know about his background. George Soros paid for his education.
I heard that. Yes.
That's a fact. I didn't believe it when I heard it. I thought, this can't be true. And I went and I followed the money trail, and it came from Soros organizations. Yeah, it's true. And then RFK Jr. yesterday said, if I'm president, we'll pay for reparations.
Reparations. I saw that too.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, okay, he's not an option. No. Trump is the only game in town. DeSantis has turned off the voters.
Yeah.
And I like DeSantis, but he's turned off the voters. He can't win. He can't carry a campaign nationally. That's his biggest problem. He's too new to the game, I think. But I think that Trump is the only game in town. And do you not feel that they're going to put him in jail? Let's talk about this. Sidney Powell yesterday, in the biggest act of cowardice I've ever seen from a political insider, cut a deal and admitted to a crime she did not commit. She said this election was corrupt, and she was correct. I wrote an article on May 12th of 2021. And I listed five ways the election was stolen, all documented. And it was from the basis of my state, my county, Maricopa County. And I went through and by the way, an hour after the article was out, 13 of my best colleagues that I work with in this business all were called and told they better disavow me. In fact, Paul Preston was told, you keep having Dave Hodges on your radio show, he's going to get you killed. Mm-hmm. And so that told me I was on the right track. Okay.
Yes.
So the election's stolen, and here's Sidney Powell. Goes and admits, I'm guilty to this, and I only got to pay a $6,000 fine, but I've got to testify against Trump. Tim, I think he's going to jail. I hope it's not true.
Well, me too. And, you know, I just, as I was waiting for the link to come through, your link to come through, it popped up in my email that the judge is threatening jail because of a tweet, or was it a tweet? Something up on his website that violates the gag order. And she's threatening jail right now. So, I mean, that's a distinct possibility.
It's almost like these people want a civil war.
Yeah.
If Trump goes to jail, there's going to be problems in this country.
You bet.
I'm too fat to run and too old to fight. It won't come for me. So, FBI, you don't need to kick in my door. Okay. But I'm just telling you, I know human nature. And I'm telling you, all you got to do right now to see how tense this country is to drive in rush hour traffic. If I live in the country, and I'm lucky, because when I go into the city, I can't stand it. And at rush hour, people are insane. I'm seeing behaviors I've never seen before. Just antisocial behaviors in great volume. And this country is wound tighter than a drum. Mm-hmm. And I feel that something like putting Trump in jail for violation of an illegal gag order, which is unconstitutional, I absolutely think this country will start to riot.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised. I live in western Nebraska. I'm in a rural area.
What part?
In Crawford, Nebraska, which is western Nebraska. It's near, we're only 40 miles from South Dakota and next door to Wyoming.
Oh, so, okay. I know the area.
Yeah, the eastern part of the state has gone blue, you know, has gone liberal. But out here in the third district, our counties out here are still very, very conservative, very MAGA. I work with the Republican Party, trying to get our elections squared away out here. But yeah, you go to the cities, and you said Maricopa County. Boy, that's a hot spot if there ever was one.
Oh yeah, I'm lucky. I have to live in the county. I'm not lucky there, but. It is the most, I don't see another more corrupt county than Maricopa County. And here is why I say this, Tim. We have irrefutable proof, both from the former RICO investigator, John Thaler, and a 120,000-page report with 20,000 affidavits, and my involvement from a third-party observational view of an attempted homicide that validates Arizona politics criminality. And I'm telling you right now, a lot of the politicians in Arizona and their administrative people are involved with the Chinese to a level that's treason. And they're involved with the Sinaloa cartel and money laundering operations. And it's been going on for a long time. And it's now just getting exposed. See, I don't know if you're familiar with the Liz Harris case. She was kicked out of the Arizona legislature for allowing this report to be brought into evidence.
No, and, I didn't know her about that. No.
Yeah. And I know Liz Harris pretty well now. We've shared the stage together in Tea Party events. And she's been on my show quite a bit. And they just said, you can't talk about us being criminals. You're kicked out of the legislature. And this is what's going on in Maricopa County. And I got to tell you, I thought Trump would be the guy to come in and start putting an end to this and start holding hearings. But he cannot take this stance. I mean, I have no problem with him saying, under my administration, we will not ever accept unequal treatment towards anyone because of sexual preference. I think it should be that way. We're not supposed to impose our religious views on others in terms of you can't even be who you are. But these people, they're not stopping with that. That's the thing that bothers me.
And it's the same with abortion, too. You know, I mean, when he was president, before Roe v. Wade went down, of course, he had to support all groups. He had to support the law, which we understand. But then, you know, again, by God's grace, he got the good three Supreme Court justices in. Roe v. Wade went down, which he celebrates now. You can defend people's rights, absolutely, by the law, but you don't have to call them out and applaud them and single them out for special treatment.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, too, the walk away movement, this is why I say I don't judge all people of a sexual persuasion with one brush. I don't do that because there are the gays against grooming group that was on Tucker's show before he was 86. You know, they were responsible people saying, no, we don't endorse what you're trying to do to kids. And yet they weren't militant. And that's the thing that bothers me is the militancy. By the way, speaking of Western Nebraska, I've got a good number of friends in the Sydney, Nebraska, Sterling, Colorado, along that Eastern Plains area. And we got a pretty good audience there. You know, I started my professional career in that area. And so I'm well aware that many of the people in that whole region are saying enough is enough. And I'm actually predicting that Western Nebraska and Eastern Colorado and the western slope of Colorado, Grand Junction, that area, I believe that these people are going to try to form a second state inside Colorado, much like what California is doing. There's already some discussion about it, and I think that's really interesting. And these people, and I guess I'm speaking about you, my experience with these people is they don't reflect the politics of Denver or Lincoln, Nebraska. These people are fiercely conservative. They raise their kids the right way. You go to a school event and they say a prayer before it starts. This is what I've seen in my experience, and they're not going to compromise.
So that's right. That's right, Dave. And there's a parallel too, talking about children. We talked about homeschooling a minute ago. That's what parents are. A lot of parents now, especially after the pandemic, when they found out what was really going on, when they had to do Zoom meetings with schools, they found out what was going on in their schools. And so homeschooling is booming right now. They're taking their kids out of school. And I just draw the parallel because they will not compromise. We homeschooled our children. It was the same thing. We were not going to put our children in a state-run school that totally are opposite to our values. And that's happening. It's happening in Idaho, too. They're talking about statehood, a different, you know, mix of statehood there with people that won't compromise.
You know, I spoke to a Tea Party and I don't want to say where it was, because the people there are not this way, but their school is. And this is in Arizona. And I spoke, and these people are very conservative. I spoke at a local church, and wonderful people. And I said, so your schools are probably a reflection of your values. And I'm thinking the Colorado Plains, you know, mm-hmm. Western Nebraska. And I'm thinking along those lines, because I'm seeing the same kind of attitudes. And they says, oh, no, we have a couple of kids that identify as dogs, and they put down dog bowls. And I'm not joking when I say this. It got really graphic. And I said, you're kidding me. And afterwards, we went out to dinner with a doctor and his wife. And they gave me the details, and I won't even say it here on the show because it gets so graphic. And yet this is endorsed by the school district.
You know, Dave, you'd be amazed out here in Western Nebraska. I went to a meeting here recently, talk about graphic things. This was a similar situation with children identifying as cats and teachers. Yeah. Making sure they have litter boxes, you know, that they can go to. This is in Casper, Wyoming. I mean, it's beyond the pale. It's just amazing.
And Wyoming, the bastion of conservatism.
And well, and here too, in Gordon, Nebraska, which is east of where I live. Again, MAGA country, very, very conservative, but the school is pushing the values that you'd see in Los Angeles or New York or New Jersey or something. I mean, and they're trying to push back, you know, trying to change that. But it's a losing battle because you've got not only teachers, administrators, you know, pushing this. Really, the only answer is to get your kids out.
Yeah, if your school district's doing that. I've seen enough schools on the Eastern Plains that I can tell you I'd be comfortable putting my kid in those schools. But I hear what you're saying. And I thought this was more of an urban problem. Casper, Wyoming is a little bigger. What is it, about 20,000 people?
Yeah, it's bigger. Yeah. But when I mentioned Gordon, Nebraska, totally left wing school. I mean, Gordon, I don't think, well, let's see. Crawford is about 1,000 people. I don't imagine Gordon's any more than that. So, you know, we're out here, and wow. And yet it's infiltrated all the way out here. Those
you
values.
Know, Tim, I have to tell you that some of the school districts, with the parents I know, if this were to happen in their kid's school, these school board members would be recalled so quickly, you wouldn't even get to read about it in the paper until after it happened. These people would not tolerate this for 2 seconds.
Well, and that is happening out here. I mean, we have on the state level, even the last election, we elected a couple of conservative who are fighting back against the agenda. Very difficult, but they don't have the majority. And so the majority always, the woke majority always outvote them. You know, it's a difficult thing. It takes time. You know, this one pastor that I know in this little town of Gordon, he ran for school board and lost. And so they still have on their school board a majority of, shall we call them, woke or radical people.
In the rural areas, do you have problems with your elections, or are they pretty straightforward?
Well, it's interesting. We have, unfortunately, in our particular county, Dawes County, Nebraska, we have all mail-in voting. And
That's not good. You answered my question.
And you know, the county clerks are really what control the elections across the nation. And we have a county clerk who kind of ran on this, on mail-in voting, how wonderful it is, like 12 years ago. And she's not budging, you know, so we're trying to push back. We did a petition for not only paper ballots, but same day counting. You know, all and no machines. We got a big, but so we're still working at that, trying to deep six the machines particularly, but also mail-in voting. It's just rife with fraud.
That's good to hear you talk about this, because it's come to the rural communities now. I've seen that.
Yes.
And in fact, in Prescott, Arizona, when I moved here, there was no more conservative area in Yavapai County up there than you'd find anywhere in the country. And yet Now it's they have one of the most corrupt set of elections you could find. Hmm. And Soros, former Soros supported county clerk and recorder, just craziness. Of course, you know, I live in the county that in districts in Maricopa County, when they opened, 60% of the machines failed, but only in the Republican areas.
Yeah.
We estimate.
Stories, yeah.
Yeah. We actually had a relative and a neighbor get caught up in this. And we estimate about 150 to 300,000 people were disenfranchised that day and didn't get to vote. It just absolutely was ludicrous what happened here. And it's all part of the same agenda. So whether you're talking sexual preference or voter theft, it all comes from the same mindset. It's this communist ideal, anti-God ideal, just a society. I can't say the words that are coming into my head because they're not kind. But I would just say this, that these people, they don't serve the Lord. And if they don't change their ways, you know, it's kind of like, this is how I look at it. If you are of the world, you're going to make an enemy of Jesus on the wrong day. Okay. And if you're of Jesus, well, you're going to make an enemy of the world. These people are total friends of the world and every perversion that exists.
That's right.
And that's who's taken over America now. And that's what a lot of people just can't get their mind around it. I'll tell them, well, they're advocating for this. And people will look at me with a blank stare like I'm from a different planet.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I remember I was watching Ted Koppel probably about 30 years ago. And it was the old Nightline show on ABC. And he had a guy on from California who was a respected journalist. And he shocked Ted Koppel out of his chair. And the guy shocked me. He said, yeah, this election we talked about here was stolen. And I thought, that's the first time I ever heard really about stolen election other than Kennedy in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, really? He's saying this? This guy's well respected. And now we know any election they want to steal, they can steal.
And they're doing it. They do it every election and they're going to do it again, you know.
And that's how we get these issues with LGBTQ going radical. They steal elections to get their people in they want. And then they impose this radical agenda on people who aren't buying it.
Well, and getting back to President Trump and that and the Log Cabin Republicans, Rick Grenell having the ear of President Trump, his agenda, and President Trump apparently is on board, is to decriminalize homosexuality around the world. That's part of that agenda. And President Trump is all for that. So it even goes beyond our borders.
Well, I'm not for you discover someone's gay and you stone them to death. That's Jesus wouldn't be for that either.
Of course not.
But so I would agree with Trump in that part of the issue. We do need to protect the sanctity of life, even with people we don't agree with. But my gosh, I just, you know, I'm thinking Trump might think this is a controversy he doesn't want to buy into as he's going through what he's going through. I don't know.
Yeah. And granted, I mean, he's going through horrible, horrible times. So I understand it. But again, just looking at it strictly, you know, politically, he should look at it from the standpoint of the Word of God. That's the big thing. But
that's true.
Looking at it politically, you know, making that connection, making the point again, you know, the people that have supported him for years and years and continue to are saying, wait a minute, hold it. We're not crossing that line.
You know, things are so bad in this country. As I think this through, I don't know if this is enough of a deficit to drive most of his base away. It'll drive some away.
Some away, yeah.
But right now, with election fraud being as rampant as it is, he can't afford to lose even 2 or 3%.
That's right. That's right.
And that's that's really interesting. I mean, what do you think his motivation is? Is it to avoid the wrath of BlackRock and that crew, or what do you think it is?
That's an interesting connection. I hadn't made that connection. It may be. It could be as simple as he doesn't want to alienate his family. You know, I don't know. I have no idea. Because I say Melania is a big supporter. And even Don Jr., during the whole Bud Light thing, when there was the boycotts going on, I saw a tweet of his saying, oh, no, don't do that. We need this vote. You know, so it runs deep in his family. So who knows where it's really ultimately coming from?
Well, that's a political statement there by Don Jr. I didn't see that, but if you're saying the way it happened, and I'm sure you are, that's a political statement, because who drinks Bud Light? People that watch football and go to rodeos.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what comes to mind. And I'm not being judgmental. I'm just saying, and those are the people that would also support Trump.
That's right.
So I can see why he said what he said there, is maybe this is not the hill to die on, because, you know, we might win this battle but lose the war. I understand why he said what he said. I'm less bothered by that than what you brought forward. In the book, well, no, I'm not going to ask that question because I don't want to give a spoiler. But just let's digress for a second here. The book is entitled Trump and Sodom, Letting the Cat Out of the Bag. This is available, I imagine, at all the places. Is it being accepted, and will mainstream sell it like Amazon and so forth?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. It's also on our website, which is Riordan Classics, R-I-O-R-D-A-N classics.com. You can get it that way and see our other offerings there as well. But yeah, it's on Amazon.com.
So, Tim, I want to ask you this personally, though. What is your occupation?
My career was in show business. I was a television writer for 20 plus years. In the old days, you know, in Hawaii Five-O, Starsky and Hutch, Fantasy Island, all those kind of good old shows, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then the content went south. And I became during that time. And then so I moved away from that and have been promoting our own projects. We have a strong anti-abortion film that we almost got produced called Sign of Jonah that I've been trying to get produced for 10 or 15 years. That's getting some traction now in various quarters. So I had a day job during that time, because, you know, I was making lots of money in show business, but when I moved away from that, it all kind of collapsed. So I was worked in the inner city of LA giving business consulting to minorities while I tried to get these projects going. But now we've got Riordan Classics. We've got the books that you see behind me, Riordan, Nowhere to Run, Nowhere to Hide, which is Behold, I'm Coming Soon. It's just deals with, it's a historical novel dealing with everything that's going on around the world, child trafficking, stolen elections, the banks, but all in the context of Jesus' soon return. So Riordan Classics really is Melissa's grounding is in the Word of God. And so we're saying, unlike people think of the classics as being Greco-Roman, but we look at the classics of those that are really grounded in Almighty God, every one of the projects that we have. That's why I urge do that. And so that's why I urge people to go to the website to take a look at that.
I think it says really interesting. So I see here a note on here too, from our common contact, CJ. She's talking about it's available on Amazon.com. It sounds like it'd be an interesting read, you know, and this is kind of taken me by surprise, and I've had time to assimilate it now. And I think, honestly, most aren't going to like it, but most aren't going to walk. I think that they'll probably see it as Trump trying to make peace with a group he doesn't need to tangle with. Is it in his platform? I mean, does it overtly come out beyond that? No. We protect the rights of everybody?
No, I think you would say that, but I think that's from going back to original thing about my GOP guy. I mean, he's a very much a platform guy. And the platform of the RNC, starting in 2016, renewed in 2020, his marriage is only between a man and a woman.
Yeah.
And so now that platform will be voted on again in 2024. And the danger, of course, is because of Trump's support of these groups, that they're going to cave on that as well, you know, in 2024. And, you know, even though it's enshrined in law now, and, you know, I forget Obergefell and Hodges, you know, marriage is they don't say it now, marriage is between two individuals. That's enshrined in law. But, you know, from a scriptural standpoint, marriage is between a man and a woman. That's just what it is.
Yeah, it's absolutely what it is. And I don't apologize for that either. It just, to me, this is not an area I would have gone. I don't think you can compromise with the devil. And that's if I look at his motivation, I think his motivation is still the same as it's always been. I don't think he's had a shift. I think he's trying to just negate one more negative force coming at him. That would be my guess. Tim, if I were to guess on what's going on, that's what it is. But you can't make deals with the devil.
That's it.
And that's, but here's the other thing, too. You remember when Hillary came out in one of the debates and she played that tape where Trump said some objectionable things about women and body parts and so forth. And really, it was locker room talk, which most males have engaged in at some point in time just because they think they should, not that they mean it. And you know what I looked at? I saw that. I said, you know, that just shows me that God knows how to use imperfect people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I took it. Didn't sway me one iota. And my wife looked and said, what do you think? I said, God uses imperfect people. I said, Trump isn't perfect. I'm not perfect. And none of us are. And I may end up categorizing it this way. But I think this is a book that needs to be read because I think people need to have a full understanding that he may be trying to keep the enemy at bay, but we're not going to let it cross it into the platform. I mean, that's what I hope people will do with this.
Yes, yes. Well, in one of the letters in the book, when King David, when the prophet Nathan came to him and called him out for the whole Bathsheba incident, you know, where he engineered the murder of her husband, he was called out. And the first thing that he said, I have sinned before the Lord. That was his response to it. He didn't make excuses. So David was a man over, after God's heart. I believe in the past that God has anointed President Trump for this time.
I agree too.
I really believe that. But so far, I haven't seen that heart that of King David to repent, and that's really where we're going with this, is that God will bless the nation if he repents. Just the way when Nineveh was not judged or destroyed when Jonah ultimately went to Nineveh and preached repentance. The city and the king repented, and God didn't destroy the nation. But we're, as you probably know, I mean, or I'm sure you feel, is that we're almost Sodom already.
In some ways, we're worse.
In this nation, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I could say I live in Sodom and you live in Gomorrah, Tim. although the area you're in, you know, I just, like I said, I have an appreciation for the majority of the people in the Western Panhandle, because I know how frustrated they are by their state politics. I know a lot of people that live in that Sydney area. They all feel pretty much the same way.
Oh, yeah.
Tim, this has been a really interesting interview. And best of luck to you on this book. And, before we go, just I have to have a quick answer because we're about out of time. But how did you end up working as a TV writer and moving to the Western Panhandle of Nebraska?
Well, after I left the show business, California was going south. Not only show business was going south as far as the content. And so actually I had a small inheritance. My wife found a video of Crawford, Nebraska. We took a look and came up here and loved it and just moved, you know, so it was that quick. And also then later on, we were here 5 years, went to Ireland for another 5 years. That's a whole nother story. I published Melissa's first book, Nebuchadnezzar, King of Babylon, down there. And then we returned about almost 4 years ago. So we've been around we got out of Ireland just in time. Ireland has really gone south. I won't go into that. But, the whole vaccine,
I'm familiar with that. Yeah. Okay. That just is so... Yeah. Anyway, I'm frustrated, but I have to say that if the election was today, I'd be voting for Trump. But, I don't know that we're all imperfect in the eyes of God, but this does bother me a little bit. And let's hope that there's a change of heart and he also can clear these legal hurdles.
Hoping and praying for. Yeah.
Well, Tim, thanks so much for coming on. Interesting interview and best of luck with the book. And let me It's called Trump and Sodom, Letting the Cat Out of the Bag by Melissa Reardon, available where they sell books like at Amazon. And ladies and gentlemen, I think it's worth a read because the more we know about our president, the better informed electorate we can be. Thanks so much, Tim.
Thank you. And I'll keep you posted if we have any developments.
Appreciate that.